I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. We are making a joyful noise today in the studio of St. John Bosco, and I am joined by the puckish priest, Father Garrett Burns.
Yee yee!
Oh, jeez.
That was a joyful noise.
That was puckish. And that wag of a cleric, Father Drew Hoffman.
Okay. What does that mean?
Wag is like a cut-up figure, kind of a, I don't know, comical guy. That wag.
What's puckish?
Puckish is to be like Puck from Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. He's the impish one that plays tricks and things like that.
Yeah.
Sheepers.
I wish puckish. Everyone could see Garrett's body language as he tried to embrace the puckish image. I'm sorry. I like to run a highbrow podcast. I'm sorry if you guys are not literate enough.
Half of these are using words that we don't like. You used ebullient the other day. It's like, I don't know what these words
mean.
Maybe if you
read more 1800s English fiction, you would be on this.
I'm making my goals for the summer.
Uh-huh.
I'm reading Shakespeare this summer.
Are you?
That's one of the goals.
Good for you. What are you starting with?
I'm going to start with Macbeth because that's the biggest one on my shelf.
You didn't read that in
high
school?
No, I've read it. I've probably read 90% of like the very famous ones, not 90% of Shakespeare, but like the ones that you need
most
to read.
People know.
Yeah. King Lear and Hamlet that kind of stuff. But that's my goal for the summer.
I always feel like I should like Shakespeare, but I don't.
But here's the thing. If you can have some lines that you use in homilies every once in a while.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you like it. People think that you're a big Shakespeare guy.
That's true.
So I think that's what Bishop Barron does. Like, I don't know if Bishop Barron, come on this podcast and defend yourself, Bishop Barron. But
challenge thrown down.
He just has a few.
Not actually that well read.
He just has a few big hitters that he uses. Funny. And
he's never made it from start to finish in any book.
He's skimmed a lot of things.
You get one line from Brother Karamazov, you can really sound like
Dostoevsky quotes.
Yes.
The only Shakespeare book I feel like I liked King Lear, but the only one that I like genuinely enjoyed, I think, was Merchant of Venice.
Oh.
Like, that made me laugh. I think that's
you
a comedy.
Have you ever seen that very cool mural? I'm sure you've seen it. Mural downtown by the bridge, maybe on 2nd or 1st Street, that has a big painting of Shakespeare.
No.
And then it's very cool. It's a big painting of Shakespeare, and then above his head in kind of arches are all the words or phrases he made up.
Oh, wow.
It's really neat of like phrases that we just use in our modern.
Yeah.
Or it's worth seeing. It's like, it's either on 1st or 2nd on the train track bridge.
Wag of a man on there?
I don't know if Puckish is either.
Puck would be on there. I feel like.
Puckish one's nay. I don't think that's going to be. Yeah.
Right. But it became a descriptor after that. It did.
Quit trying to make Puckish a thing.
I was at the Globe Theater in London where he did his plays, and they had one of those posters, like all of the phrases that we take for granted, which is really cool. This one souvenir I brought back, human skull. Not a real human skull. But it's hard to find a good looking ceramic skull.
I had a skull guy and he retired. But
I know they're hard to find. It's a dying art, but they had one because of Hamlet. It sits on my writing desk. It's
nice.
It's not really for the Shakespeare.
Yeah.
It's the, all the cool saints in their paintings have a human skull nearby them. And so I felt like that was the only missing piece between me and sainthood was had a good
some
human
decor.
Skull. And you didn't tell me about your skull guy before he retired. Yeah, and so that's,
do you think the saints had, they just had a real person's skull? Like who?
I bet some of them
like
did.
Just the
I'm
monks, like an old
did.
Monk or something.
Oh, it was probably like passed down. Like, you get his office and his skull. Not like his, like the skull he owned, not his personal skull. But I went to mass at an altar. This was in Lithuania. And the altar stone was supported by a single beam. And inside that beam were three human skulls covered in glass.
Europe is nuts.
So it was people that had been, I think, martyred at the time by Vikings, monks of this monastery killed by the Vikings. And so their skulls were placed then into the stand that the altar sat on, and very visible. It was both cool and eerie at the same time.
Okay.
So I just need two more skulls and I can make an altar. Two skulls short of an altar. That's also a very popular saying used around the diocese.
Two skulls short of an altar, if you know what I'm saying.
That puckish guy, yeah. Two skulls short over there. Well, back to the podcast and important things. I chose John Bosco. I forgot we even started with John Bosco. I chose John Bosco not only because he's a personal favorite, but he's a priest known for his joyful nature. That he had holiness and joviality and boisterousness all side by side. Because there's always people out there, we run into this all the time, people that look at seminary or they look at holiness as a dreary thing. And you, I think, suggested, Drew, that we should have a couple, share a few stories then of just some zany, silly pranks or things that went on in seminary days or amusing stories. It's always one of the questions that gets asked at Q&A at Quo Vadis retreat is, tell us a funny seminary story. And when you're put on the spot, it's sometimes hard to come up with some. There's bunches of them, but it's hard in the moment. But having had this topic prepared beforehand, now you're not put on the spot. So I'm trusting you are prepared to regale us with some seminary stories.
Yeah, you talk about a lot of pranks and stuff. I've never been a huge prankster. I think I'm just like, it's more of like, I'm not good at them. And so I don't like, if I'm not good at it, I'm not going to do it. We were talking about this back to high school was more of one shutting down pranks than making them go. So there's one point, we're sophomores, Drew and I, and we get kicked out of a final study session. So it's history with Mr. Swords. He was famous for really tough tests. So we'd have a study session the night before. You could go and talk it out with him. So, but we got kicked out because we were just messing around or talking or something like that.
Which Garrett never got in trouble once in his whole life. And so it was not like we were bad boys, like getting like, crazy in honors world history.
I feel like all listeners know who was the source of why you two got kicked out of this.
Yeah, right.
So we got kicked out. So we were just, I think, playing wall ball or something at Carroll. So we're just messing around. But a ball gets on top of the roof. And so we're like, well, we just got to go get the ball. And it's kind of got those stones where you can find a way to basically rock climb to get up top. So I get up there. I get the ball and throwing it down. But then Alan Shuckman, who's an administrator and could come lay down the law on us, walks up and sees me. Something, oh no. And I'll never forget. He goes, hey, Santa Claus, what are you doing up there?
I forgot about that.
And I panic. But then out of the corner of my eye, I see there's like four coolers over to my left. And so I just go, well, I found this. And he goes, what is that? What are those doing up there? I open them up and they're filled with water balloons. And so I was like, yeah, there's these water balloons. He's like, okay, well, dump them out and bring them down or something like that. So we figure out that this is finals time. So the seniors had planned a prank for the next morning. And I was a sophomore. My brother was a senior. He was somehow involved in planning. They were going to pelt everyone with water balloons as they went into school the next day. And I shut it down.
That is like the nerdiest thing to do in like a high school special of like, you would be the enemy of the after school TV show.
The narc.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty much. But it got me out of getting in trouble because I was just like, yeah, I got to shut down this prank.
That is what I remember from that moment of like how lucky it was that Garrett was about to, by the head football coach, a guy who's never gotten in trouble in his life, just get ripped a new one after we've already gotten kicked out of a honors study hall. Like, not the bad boys, but he's been a bummer about pranks ever since then.
Joy kill.
Sorry.
So you are not punkish, in fact.
Yeah, I guess not.
You are the opposite of that. So I was thinking of one when I was at Conception. So you guys remember Lake Placid? There's on the side there. There's a lake is kind of a generous term for it. But I was out for a run. It was towards the, I don't even remember what was going on. Anyway, I was out for a run and I remember the pond was quasi frozen over. So the edge of ice around it. And I'm running around the pond and there is this giant dead turtle. Huge snapping. I mean, it looked like Escape from the Zoo, Galapagos size giant turtle. I stopped my run to admire this dead animal because it was magnificent. Well, you don't see a lot of interesting things at Conception. So this was the height of the day. So I finished my run and I was just telling one of the guys at the house back at Conception about this turtle. So we have a big banquet that night. And at the Conception, when you had the banquets, everyone's there. Two of the guys sneak out of the banquet, go and get this dead turtle, bring it into the building and place it on the floor of one of the guys' room. This guy comes back from the banquet. He's a priest now for Oklahoma City and lights are off. He's just walking into his room and steps onto this dead turtle.
Oh.
starts yelling. Like, no one else on the floor knows anything about this. We just start hearing, who did this? Who did this? So obviously a gaggle of guys collect in the hallway. And he was a farm guy from Oklahoma. So he just rolls up in his sleeve. He's still in his suit, rolls up his sleeve and just picks up with his bare hands this enormous dead turtle and is shaking it. So dead turtle juice is going throughout the floor. And so someone, a Father Garrett-like person, tells him who was responsible for it. It was one of the underclassmen. So we were seniors at the time. So underclassmen are across the patio area in St. Michael's building. So he's like, all right, he's getting this. So he starts marching across the building with everyone just kind of hooting, hollering, following him behind, carrying this enormous, leaky, dead turtle. And the guy who is responsible for it meets him at the front door with a broom and is trying to knock the dead turtle out of his hand because he doesn't want it in his room. I owed that guy with the broom. He had done a prank on me earlier, so he had something coming to him. So I tackle him. So that's really the only thing I have to help in this is I found the turtle and I tackled the guy that was trying to keep it from entering the building. It was a Wichita guy, so I felt no guilt about it. So Carson, the farmer carrying this dead turtle, carries it up there and then begins doing a puppet show over the man's bed with the dead turtle.
What the heck is happening?
Brother Elias, who's supposed to be the floor chaplain this time, hears it, and Brother Elias is childlike in his own way. So he's just kind of standing in the background watching this whole thing unfold, not doing anything to intervene. So finally, Carson just kind of tosses the turtle in the air and just lets it land on the bed and then just brushes his hand and walks out. The guy had to buy new sheets. Like, there was no getting dead turtle out of those bed sheets. But afterwards, in a spirit of camaraderie, we all went down to Maria Lock, another body of water on there. We built a small raft. We named the turtle Leonardo, and we gave it a Viking's funeral. We set it on fire.
Set it on fire.
And just pushed it out into Maria's Lock, which didn't go very well because none of us turtles don't burn that well, and we're terrible raft builders. Yeah. So it flamed up for a while and then just sank back into the depths from which the turtle came, and we had a bonfire. But it was a great evening of fun with a dead turtle. The most fun I have ever had with a dead turtle, honestly.
May Leonardo rest in peace.
Rest in peace. We were at Conception, and at Conception, you didn't see girls a lot, as you guys know that.
It was a rare sight.
It's a rare sight. And so I'm getting into the gym one night, and I would just go into the gym sometimes late at night. Not late at night, but in the evening to watch TV. Because I was like, you can have a TV.
So there was a TV in the gym?
At the JP2 Center, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so I would go... I go there one night after dinner, I'm heading over there, and we had just gotten a talking to about not giving the code out to strangers. Mm-hmm. That too many strangers were getting the code and getting into the seminarians only workout center. Well, I'm going to put the code in, and out from across the building, around the corner, this beautiful girl comes out. And again, we never see girls at Conception. And she's like, hey, do you know the code to get into the building? And I just like,
whatever you want.
42005, that's the code. And I'm like, don't tell anyone. And she's like, I'll just tell my friends, no big deal. I was like, okay. So she goes and starts working out, and I have to then pretend like I'm working out. So I'm working out.
Got super heavy weights on the bench press like, this over is just there. Typical,
and she's way out working me. I look, we're the only people there. We get to chatting a little bit. She's supposed to be on a silent retreat, XYZ. I mean, she's like, is there a basketball goal anywhere I get some shots up? I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm leaving seminary. And then she asked me about the Wichita State-Louisville game, which had just played a Final Four game that Wichita State had lost. And she wanted, and I'm like, bingo, this is my wheelhouse. I love basketball. I could say, and I just froze, man. I just freaked out and froze. I was like, we played good. They lost, but they played good. And so then she's like, this guy has never heard about basketball. He doesn't know anything about sports. I like tried to run on the treadmill, but I had actually like already worked out that day, so I didn't make it. So I just went back and I told the guys about what happened. And I remember Brian Burkamp like started night prayer that night at diocesan times, like, a demon has been sent.
That's what I was thinking.
To steal Drew's vocation. So I tell the story the next morning at breakfast. Its story is spread, and I've spread it a little bit. People are like going into the guest refectory pretending they need extra coffee to try to see if they can get a sight. Garrett walks out of the midday mass, which was with everyone, and he goes, I hope you're happy with yourself that no one in seminary paid attention at mass today. And it was true. Like, guys were like looking around and
craning. Yeah.
A very holy, pious kid comes up to me and he goes, hey, was it the blonde or the brunette? So eventually they got kicked out of the workout space that later that afternoon. They're like, how did you guys get in here? And I don't think they narked me out, but I did hear someone complaining that Skip had to remove them.
That's funny.
So that's the day I knew I was going to be a priest.
I didn't narc you out. I had learned formation worked up to that point. So I got rid of my narc tendencies. You've
grown.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's good. I'm sure we got more of those. So let's do a volume two of that at a later podcast. But right now, I want to go to our main topic, which is a question that comes from a listener. They just asked us to be able to talk a little bit about different priestly ministries that a diocesan priest can be asked to do. Because the normal, obviously, is parish ministry, but there's a lot of different things that can take place in there. And so I just thought we'd have a conversation about that. I would say, kind of as a caveat, and this is something I tell the seminarians a lot, is first and foremost, we are formed, we are trained, we plan to be parish priests. Sometimes we get pulled out of that stream for a time period, but we should never join diocesan priests and like, well, I want to be this or I want to be that.
Right.
We do this to become parish priests, and maybe we get asked to do something else. Maybe we don't. Even I would think as we're doing those other things, at least in my own life, so I'm in a ministry kind of outside of parish work. There's a part of my heart that definitely misses parish work. I feel blessed to do the things I do. I enjoy it, but I miss having my own altar. I miss being in the same, walking with the same people every Sunday. That's what I'd planned for my life, and the Lord's taking care of that. I'm not complaining, but that is what I was formed for, and in my mind, what I, when my time comes, the way I will return to.
Another caveat there is that some of these are simply assigned. Maybe the bishop says you're doing this. And sometimes you can ask, you can express your desire to the bishop to do maybe one of those things. And he may or may not answer that in the way that you want. So you can like say, I think this would be an area that I would thrive, that I think is important, stuff like that. The bishop has every right in the world to say, no, I don't think that makes sense for a variety of reasons right now. But you can express that. But sometimes you're just told, hey, this is what you're this is what you're going to be doing now.
And that's obedience, to be able to express desires, but still to do what you are told at the end of the day. But also sometimes you don't express desire and you're just handed it. And that's good too. The Lord works in both of those things.
Yeah, I was just going to say at the start that this was something that was attractive to me, I think, especially just in the last couple of years of seminary. And I've learned since it's a very millennial thing, I think, that's just like they say millennials like get new jobs a lot. And they're not necessarily like they're going to start with one company and they work their way up the ladder. Like they're very interested in just different experiences and kind of ebb and flow with where your life is at. And like there's some aspect to that in priesthood as well, that at different points in my life, I'm going to have a lot of energy for this and I can express that to the bishop. And again, whatever he asks me to do, I'm going to do. But discerning that with him is a possibility for the priest, that if you're feeling called, even at a certain point in your life to a certain ministry, you could be called into that or ask into that. So that was just an attractive thing for me about the priesthood, that there is a variety of ways throughout your priestly life that could be expressed. So,
well, and I like what you said about discerning it with you. And I think that's an interesting thing too. Different bishops are going to have different ways of operating. Right. Bishop Kemi really does like to bring us into the process, in my experience, in that he likes to discern with us. And, you know, at some point, as we've said before, there has to be a final word to the conversation, but he does like to talk with the priests of the diocese and discern and understand that not every bishop operates in that way. Some bishops will just say, here's what you're doing, go to it. And again, the Lord is able to work in both of those ways. So I think one of the ones that I think of most, a ministry that a diocesan priest can do that's outside of parish ministry, is military chaplaincy. Father Capon, we have that. We have had priests of the diocese in our diocese oftentimes serving in military chaplaincy. Have either of you ever been tempted or desirous of being a military chaplain?
I've thought about it. I had a good buddy in my class at Mundelein that was co-sponsored by the military. And so it's something I would talk about with him time and again. And I've just kind of pushed it off. From what I've seen around our diocese is that really usually it's kind of an established pastor first and you're really solid in your priesthood. So it's not something I'm engaging directly, but I guess it's just something that's in the back of my mind. Talking with him a lot, extreme need there is for Catholic chaplains especially, and seeing how that could be a benefit, like coming back, like wherever you're at, you're going to have military or vets or something. Right. So like knowing that specific subset and their ministerial needs could be great in any parish, but
that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
A few years ago, I was at the wedding of a staff member of St. Isidore's, whose dad was a two-star general. So kind of a powerful, nationally known guy that I had never met because he lived in, I think, South Carolina at the time. So I just met him at the wedding. So we get to talking, and he is an impressive, powerful figure. My brother said it was the best father of bride speech he's ever seen, largely because he was in full uniform, had a drink in his hand, just was carrying himself in like this intimidating, strong, really great Catholic man sort of way. So he's asking me about military chaplaincy, about have I considered, and all of that, the need, all that. And I'm just terrified of this guy. So I'm like,
I'd love to.
I thought about it for sure. And just like trying to get through the conversation. And that next 2 weeks, not exaggeration, I got 10 phone calls from military recruiters who said they had got my number from, and I eventually had to just shut them all down. It's like, that's not how this works. That's not how it works for me. That's not how, but they do just desperately need that. And we have Father David Voss, a priest of our diocese, who's doing that right now.
We've had Father Dan Lorimer, Father Ned Blick, Father Vic Bieberly.
Eric Weldon?
He was military before he went in.
Oh, he's maybe never that's served what I'm
it. Father Wayne Schmidt. Those are the ones that come to mind, and obviously Father Capon. It's not a temptation personally to me. If there were a war on, that'd be one thing. But it's not naturally in my personality style, I don't think. But that's one, like, you can express desire to the bishop. So there's two ways to become a military chaplain. You can either be co-sponsored, so your local diocese and then the military archdiocese both sponsor you through seminary, and they work out a deal where you spend part of your time in the home diocese, part of the time for the military. Or what's been more common, at least in our diocese, is a man is a priest for the diocese, and then he's loaned to the military archdiocese for a certain number of years. That's been really all of those guys. I don't think any of them were co-sponsored. And that's one, as you were saying, Drew, that a guy gets to express a desire for. No one's sent to the military chaplain against their will. That's right. One assignment that's you're never going to get that and just say, you're doing this. Guys usually start that conversation with the bishop, and they discern it together and see if it makes sense. So that's one that has to start with some desire there. What other things?
Like a hospital chaplaincy is a pretty unique, like you're kind of giving yourself full time to this, something that all priests do, but that's your full time ministry, is a unique way to care for the sick and the dying.
Yeah, we have two in the diocese that serve solely as hospital chaplains.
Which is really a gift that
Amen.
That we have on call at the two Catholic hospitals. Not just like, Gary and I were chaplains at Wesley when we were at Cathedral. Mm-hmm. And we would make rounds and we were on call, but it was a little different. We weren't just like roaming the halls. We weren't right there. We were several minutes away. So to have at our Catholic hospitals here in town, guys who basically live there, who are available for regular visits, sacraments, stuff like that. That's a real gift at that particular time. It's a particular type of ministry. It would take a real specific spirituality to do that.
Yeah, there definitely has to be a charism to do that well for a long period of time. That's another one that, honestly, I don't recognize it in myself. That would be a very difficult assignment for me personally. It's just not, I'm too German. It's being efficient with the sacraments, and you need to be able to spend time with them. Mm-hmm. My good friend Father Ben Green was a hospital chaplain for a while, and maybe looking at him, he doesn't really cut the figure visually and be like, oh yeah, this guy's going to be, has a great bedside manner, but he did. Amen. I mean, he just had so many natural gifts and serves. I can't tell you how many people would come out of the hospital, oh, the priest that looks like Jesus did so much for me, because he's got a long beard and long hair. But he had a real gift, I think, in that area, which I don't sense in myself personally.
Yeah, I saw Father Jeremy. I worked summer at the hospital as a seminarian, and he just a good old country. He could just talk to anybody and just like create a conversation and a connection. That was, I think, is such a gift and to have that. Yeah, you call it like a bedside manner. You think of like a doctor, but a priest and a chaplain, that's a skill and a charism as well. So I get a lot of life from going to the hospital, making visits to my parishioners. But yeah, I think when I do it once a week or on emergencies or something like that, doing it every day would be tough for me, I think. But
yeah, I liked our experience at Wesley, but we were pretty in and out. We would go there for a few hours on Tuesday afternoon, Friday afternoon, and then be on call. And it was, I mean, a lot of my stories and real deep spiritual experiences did come from those. But I'm exactly the same as you, Chad. Sometimes those rounds were hard for me. And I had to learn a lot in that. Mm-hmm. Because it's just like, okay, I've got a list of 47 people who need to be visited. The temptation's like, okay, this person's good. This person's that. This person I'm going to need to spend time with. And that's not how college has helped me with that. Being in college ministry, you got to just chill out and be and hang. And other things will get done later.
Well, and you're in kind of a quasi, you're a pastor, but it's an unusual pastor.
So I would say high school and college chaplaincy in similar veins. And I am a pastor at St. Paul. And most college student centers have a parish element, even if they're not officially parishes. St. Isidore, same same deal. So you have regular people who come to mass on a regular basis and things like that. But yeah, chaplaincy, whether it's at high school or college, is a different thing. I mean, I spend a lot of time doing stuff that these guys don't do at all. And there's a lot of things, like I don't visit the hospital that often. I don't do funerals. Yeah. We're having a funeral at St. Paul this week that another priest who knew the family a lot longer is going to do. And I'll be there. That's the second funeral at St. Paul since I've been there. And so those are different experiences. High school chaplaincy, and we're blessed in this diocese that we've got full-time high school chaplains. Yeah. That doesn't happen in a lot of places. Those guys usually have parishes or a couple other jobs.
And we've got 5 guys involved in high school chaplaincy. Okay. And yeah, a lot of their time, I got to serve for 4 years as high school chaplain. A lot of that time is usually spent in the classroom. A lot of it's, frankly, going to sporting events. So many hours. And when I was at high school, right, Colgan, and you know, they were good, but that's where the kids are. That's where their parents are. And so you just go from sporting event to sporting event in the evening, and it's tiring in a different way, but it's right, good. And you do field trips, you do retreats and things like that. So it's different from parish ministry.
Yeah. So it is again. And guys will give me grief because I'm not up super early in the morning and I get to do a lot of fun stuff. And then you get to see, you do a lot of like rough stuff too, really, really rough stuff too. And as a college chaplain, that's why I tell, you know, I think some priests kind of give me grief because I'll do a lot of weddings. I do a lot of weddings from kids that maybe grew up in their parish or something like that. But it's like, I'm with these kids every single day, not just an hour on Sunday, right, or if they come to youth group. Like I go down in the basement and these kids are there. They're out at the social tap and I'll go and visit them there. I'm sitting with them at the tennis match and stuff like that. So it is an everyday experience. So there's a different relationship.
And there, it's not just, you're there with their relationships. I mean, because most of their relationships are involved in that community that you're involved in, whereas, you know, their pastor, well, she may be from another parish, so she's not there on the holiday, but you see them both together a lot of times, I would think.
So, but it's different. It's different than my experiences, just even at the cathedral. It's the only kind of regular parish I've had, and that's not even that regular.
Yeah,
but
it's a little unusual too.
It's seminary work, so that obviously applies kind of to here where we're at the House of Formation. There's several men who are in that work, but Father Ben Sawyer, a priest of the diocese who's at Kenrick Glennon Seminary, who does formation and some teaching there. And so that's something that would be significantly different.
Yeah. Father Pat York for a while.
Pat York was at Conception. And your roles in that capacity may be different. You may be a spiritual director, you may be a formator, and you may be teaching classes. It depends, but it would be very different than being at St. Margaret Mary or something like that.
In some ways, working with formation with the seminaries, one of the ways that it's different is I'm much more direct with them than I would be with parishioners. Sure. You know, parishioners, okay, if they're coming to you, that's great. They don't have to come to you. And so you've got to walk a line in, of giving them advice, but also making sure they come back. It's a different line with the seminarians because, okay, we have a plotted amount of time. We've got a point A. We got to get to point B. And I'm going to tell you some things. And you need to do these things. And you don't have the option. Well, ultimately, you have the option of whether you want to listen or not. But that comes with consequences involved with it in a way that parish ministry doesn't. So it's a different power dynamic even in how you do those meetings and converse and expectations in that as well.
Seminaries, that's an area that I've, you know, I would not necessarily be volunteering for, but there's, I've seen the good of those priests had such an impact on my life. The brotherhood is what attracts me. And that's what really, like, the brotherhood amongst the priests that are there, watching men grow up, that I think is really a cool thing. There'd be some hard parts of it as well.
Yeah, the only other kind of unique one I was thinking was missionary work. So for a long time, we had, you know, a mission in Venezuela.
That's right.
And even now, we kind of have some, you'd say, quote unquote, mission priests in Dodge City Diocese or Jefferson City Diocese. Mm-hmm. But that would be similar where that bishop can't send one of us out there without that conversation and kind of our agreement because we're kind of bound to obedience in the Diocese of Wichita. And so that would have to be a further conversation on top of that. But that is really mission work. A lot of those dioceses, I mean, are, I think, technically mission, you know, according to the Vatican, they're mission territory. And it's, you need that missionary heart to say, I'm going to go away from my home and serve in that way.
Yeah, that's even how my assignment to K-State worked. Yeah. There had to be some discussion. There was discussion there because I was outside the diocese. But yeah, you hear about, we had a number of our priests in Venezuela over the years. We don't have that same mission anymore, but that was so life-giving. When you would talk to those priests, Father Jerry Beats, the first one that comes to mind, but there's plenty of them that were doing that. It was so life-giving to them. It was different than parish work. And it was for particular souls probably that were ready for that. But you get this very explicit, and all of us are missionaries, but an explicit experience of mission work.
That would be one that would be more personally attractive to me than say hospital or military. The idea, you know, even in the diocese in the recent years, there's been discussion of Alaska, Anchorage, being a missionary diocese, asking if we had people that would be willing and available. There's a part of me that's an attractive thing too. Just in now, honestly, as I get older and I'm more placed in the diocese and more connections, that attraction's dwindling. I get more rooted. Part of me is also recognizing I do want that. And when I have followed my wants, it's not always felt great. So I need to just let that be an obedience thing. If Bishop asked me to do it, sure. But I'm not sure if I'm confident that I'm like, this is my desire, because that's a desire I don't entirely trust in myself, honestly.
Yeah.
We've touched on this a little bit when Brian Nelson was in here, but canon law is an element. So we have a number of guys who will go off to study canon law and then return. And it's not very often their full-time job, but you will hear guys go off for further study to get canon law degrees and then return home to assist with that in the tribunal or some of these kind of canon law situations here in town. But that's not really a full-time position usually.
Well, and alongside that, we had David Leese on the podcast, you know, Vicar General. There's one in every diocese, and pulling out of parish work to be doing a little bit more of the diocesan parish or administrative work. Right. And that, again, is a outside of the box sort of thing. I don't know if there's any diocese where the exorcist would be full time.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't heard that.
There are a lot of dioceses where that's part of their time. Right. Again, that's outside of parish ministry.
Sometimes you can be the president of a Catholic high school.
That's a mistake. You can, but
never again will anyone.
I'm trying. I don't. Those were the ones I had written down, and so
yeah, I think that hits most of the ones I was thinking. I don't know if you had any others, Garrett.
I don't think so.
I think it's a great point to reiterate. You don't become a priest because you want to do one of these jobs.
Right.
You become a priest because of the parish priesthood. In this, if you're joining for a diocese.
Yeah.
And the other things are either challenges or kind of gifts. And the challenges are gifts and the gifts end up being challenges and things like that. But that's not that. You got to be careful with that.
Mm-hmm. I think I've told this before. And I think when I was in seminary, the idea of being like a high school chaplain was always an exciting thing for me. And I did want to do that. I never said it to anyone because I recognize I was coming to be a parish priest. I'm not doing this for any particular job. And then that happened to be the one I got to do right outside of the box. And that was a great privilege. And I kind of said, Lord, okay, that was my one desire. Whatever you want after that, he fulfilled that. And then I went from high school chaplain to the parish, and I loved being in the parish. I loved being a pastor. But that is our main focus as we're preparing for ordination. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I've got the final word today, and it comes from St. Bonaventure. He says, "If you learn everything except Christ, you learn nothing. If you learn nothing except Christ, you learn everything." See you next week.